Hey guys, gals, and non-binary pals, this is Saverin, and this is sort of not really an episode of Southpaws because we're kind of on a bit of a hiatus right now. Honestly, there's really not been anything good in the world we want to talk about. It's all very depressing. Shit's bad. We've got, after months of unrest, we've got Biden picking Kamala Harris as his VP. We have the president intentionally fucking over the USPS and just publicly saying it out loud that he's intentionally doing it, and the government's doing fuck all because it's all in his pocket. We have a useless Senate. We have a useless House. The Senate has adjourned until the first week of September without any sort of coronavirus relief bill, and everything just really fucking sucks in the world right now. So we've not really been feeling up to podcasting, and I'm sure this is understandable. And we hope that people are finding little things that make them happy in this shit-ass time. For me, I have been playing the new patch for Final Fantasy XIV. It's really good. I finished it, I woke up early to get going on it, so I would get it done as soon as I could, lest some asshole decide to spoiler it for me in Limsa La Mensa. I got that done, enjoyed it immensely, got the feels, the music in certain scenes is really cool, and a lot of the content they added is just super great. Like, the fact that you can now fly in the old world is really cool. It's not quite on par with when WoW did it for Cataclysm, but it is impressive that they, you know, just filled in the holes and made it so that you could fly from point to point. Yeah, you can't land in a lot of it, but that's kind of pointless anyway. They did add a few nooks and crannies that you can go sneak off and ERP in if you want to. But other than that, it's just been a really nice quality of life update in Final Fantasy 5.3. On the Epic Games Store, the free game Remnant from the Ashes is pretty fun. It's a shooty Souls-like game that I spent a few hours today playing, and it was, well, pretty enjoyable. It's very much a B-tier game, but if you're looking for a Souls-like game that is currently free for the following week, so until next Thursday, August 22nd or so, you can totally do that. Like, there's a $10 DLC that comes later, but it's free for now. The other thing that we had said we were going to talk about was that 3 weeks ago at this point, Fuzz and I were going to rewatch a couple of documentaries and discuss them briefly. When Fuzz and I are having a conversation, it's not very brief. But I sat down and rewatched the Brony Doc, the 2013 My Little Pony fandom fellation fic. This was put together by John DeLancey with the contribution of Tara Strong, and was basically a vehicle to make money and generally show the fandom in a very positive light, as best they could. This was 2013, so it was like season 3 had not even happened yet. It was the tail end of season 2, and the fandom had not had its first major cataclysm with Twilight getting her wings, which, god, that was in season 3. Which, needless to say, was quite the deal-breaker for many bronies. But the movie basically starts off with a number of bronies, mostly white with a couple Asian peoples, like one Hispanic person, then cuts to basically them asking random people what they think of bronies. It's like, oh, you're a bunch of gays or pedos or deviants. And then they did an animated segment, which I don't know why they felt the need to do this, but apparently they underpaid or didn't pay at all the animators for this segment. So if you get a chance to pirate this film, which I fully suggest you do, don't give these fuckers any money, even if you can at this point, understand that they didn't pay the people that made some of these animations, which really shouldn't surprise you. And the movie starts out with a rural North Carolina brony, Alex Tebeckin. Rural area, they make sure to emphasize this by showing a Walmart and fields and country music in the background. You know, he's more concerned about being able to buy the pony merch. He drives an old Mercedes that has pony stickers on it. He has the, you know, traditional John Joseco Obey Celestia poster in his house. And basically it's just focusing on him for a little bit. Then there's another guy, a white guy. So everybody in this film that they talk to and they give a name is either white or Asian. Now, there weren't very many women, and there certainly weren't many minorities in the fandom, but they really didn't talk to anybody that wasn't Lily fucking White in this. Like, the most ethnic you get is Living Tombstone, and he's Israeli. Beyond that, like, they talk to people in Germany and the UK, but it's primarily US-based and primarily around BronyCon Summer 2012, which was in New Jersey. Like, the real point in this one is that, like, they focus on this one kid, Lyle Gilpatrick, and make him out to be this really sympathetic character because he's just this weird little guy. He's like 15 at the start of this, and he likes My Little Pony, and this is such a big fucking problem for his parents, and he's like, oh, my parents are conservative, and he doesn't want to tell his parents, and he doesn't want to tell his mom, and his mom susses out of him, and she's like, oh, he's gay, isn't he? Didn't say as much in the film, but it's heavily implied that they did not approve, and it was this particular point that got stuck in a lot of people's craw, because in the Jenny Nicholson Brony a Fandom autopsy video, she talks about how, holy shit, they sent this kid off to boarding school, which, if you're in the UK, that's, you know, private school. If it's in the US, that's generally like a re-education camp. And in reality, because Fuzz and I did a little bit of digging, all Lyle did is he's like, well, I just wanted to join the military, so I went to like a prep school. And it turns out that Lyle got his act together, joined the military, and like, here we are 10 years later, he's actually doing okay, still a Marine infantryman, and has a girlfriend. Like, he turned out to be perfectly straight and perfectly fine, and whoop-de-doo, you know? The first guy, Alex DeBeckin, he jumped ship at the Twilight Wing debacle and got himself a girlfriend, moved to California, became a truck driver. And the only reason I know this is that Fuzz and I found a interview from like 2019 from some tiny podcast with 100 views on youtube.com that they had an interview and talked with these two kids. Well, they're not kids now, but they were at the time in 2013 when this was made. So there's that. And like, a lot of it is just talking to your average white nerd who just happens to like My Little Pony, which it isn't really telling you much other than, wow, isn't this queer? But like, not in a gay way. Like, they really focus on the point that like, we're not gay. Well, I'm not gay, but they really want you to know that just because they like a little girl's show, that doesn't make them gay, which of course that's true, but people are so fucking hung up on the media they consume, it's just dumb. Like, the closest they get to any sort of inclusivity in this is, well, they talk to Purple Tinker, like, twice, and they talk to this Daniel Richards kid who's on the spectrum and dealing with social anxiety, and, like, they do this little spectacle thing of making sure, like, oh, following his journey to go on a train in the UK to go to one of the early Buck conventions, which is the BronyCon UK, which, again, it's just like, hey, look at this guy, he's weird, he's socially awkward, I mean, he wouldn't be out of place in a furry con, really. Like, I sympathize with most of these kids, because when I first attended Anthrocon in 2004, I was an awkward weirdo who came with a couple disposable cameras and didn't know anybody and was really scared the whole time because, holy shit, I was traveling from here to New Jersey and then taking a train to Philadelphia. That was when they were in the Adams Mark back in the day. Like, I got to the train station and then had to take a taxi to the hotel. That was a new experience then, too. I mean, one of the things that they really focused on this is that they were really hopeful. Like, Tinker talked about how the burgeoning PonyCon scene was happening and there was cons popping up all over the country, which was true back in 2013. Like, there was a whole bunch of cons that popped up and failed immediately because a lot of bronies didn't have any background in convention planning or knew the costs associated with it. So they just kind of fell over and caught fire and just didn't happen. Like, there was supposed to be one in Georgia that never happened. There were several in Tennessee that never happened. Texas at one point had four, and they eventually faded out. The other thing they do is that they do a second animated sequence during the movie towards the back where they talk about how the bronies are divided into the moderates and the hipsters and the evangelists, where there's like trying to delineate the fandom into its various parts. And then there's like the content creators. There is a weird little segment, though, in it because, like, they introduce some girl ponies wandering into the scene during the animated segment, and they're like, hey, girls watch this shit too, you know? And John Delancey's pony is just like, well, yeah, that's expected though, you're girls. It was really kind of sexist and dismissive, but considering that the film is called Bronies, the extremely unexpected fans of My Little Pony, it's not too surprising that they're like, oh, we're just going to focus on the dudes. But still, come on. Like, the thing is with this is because it was in 2013, it was very forward-thinking and hopeful for the future. Like, it wasn't looking back on a fandom. It was looking forward to, like, this will soon become a social movement that will change the world. Well, unfortunately, that didn't really happen. And the fandom eventually sort of faded into what you have now, which isn't much. But, you know, for a 2013 piece, it wasn't exactly bad. Like, it does the little end of movie thing where it's like, such and such did this, and this person went to the con and had a good time. And Lauren thinks the show's gonna open people's minds about being gentle and making a difference. It's just this fluffy little piece. It's an hour and a half, and you really have to go and pirate it if you want to watch it. I didn't exactly enjoy it, but it was certainly interesting going back and being like, I recognize them. I recognize them. Oh, I know what happened with them. Oh, that guy. That gal. Ooh. You know? Because, again, I'm looking at it from a 7 year later perspective, and given my experiences in the fandom, there's several people that I'm just like, oh yeah, that guy turned out to be a big old Trumper, that's a damn shame. Or, oh, there's Pixel Kitties, I love her, she's still amazing. Now, to contrast this, I will say that Ash Coyote's The Fandom is extremely good, and I have enjoyed it both times I watched it, and still got kind of choked up when they showed footage of Anthrocon 2019. So, The Fandom by Ash Kreese is a 2019 documentary film that's available on Blu-ray. It's on YouTube, so you can watch it completely free in 1080p, etc. It was sitting at around 300,000 views when I saw it, again, for a note-taking reason. It was actually really cool because the first time I watched it, I was watching it with the Furry Fiesta staff who had joined for the social meet, which was over Discord, but because you can share your desktop and share video, we all watched it with off of Sable's, and it was funny because at one particular point when he was talking, Sable had been talking just then, but then he started talking again about something that seemed very unrelated, and then it shifted over to, oh no, that's actually Sable in the documentary. So that was fun. One of the interesting things about that one is I either have met or know a lot of people involved in that. And there's a few people that I haven't met, but I would really like to, given the opportunity. Because specifically, they talked to Rod O'Reilly and Mark Merlino. You know, these guys are the generally accepted progenitors of the fandom as a fandom by itself. You know, it goes back going to the 70s, like where they met in the 70s, in like 77. They started their Cartoon Fantasy organization, which was like one of the first anime clubs in America. And eventually, hey, turns out they're gay and they hook up, get together, and they're together to this day, which is also extremely cool. But it talks about how like wild early sci-fi fandom cons were, and like eventually the sci-fi cons were like, yo, there's too much anime in this shit. You need to go make your own anime conventions. And Rod and Mark were like, wait a minute, if they're making the anime people do that, I bet we could do the same thing ourselves. And thus Conference Zero happened, which was, you know, not necessarily information I knew. Like, I knew in the quotation sense that, like, I have a general sense of the fandom's history, but it was also really cool to just have them directly talking about it and talking about the history of the fandom. I mean, the fandom's been around longer than I've been alive, that's for sure. And around this time, in 1977, that's about when all the furry fandom really came to be, but also comic shops and comics also came around. You know, you've got your first funny animal but serious comic like Albedo, which was Irma Felna of the EDF, which was a science fiction comic featuring anthro characters. The main character, Irma Felna, was a fox lady, I think, and it was her and her dramatic adventures fighting in a space war. And they were anthros, but that way they were anthros telling a dramatic story, which was new at the time. It was novel. And then you also had things like Omaha the Cat Dancer, which came out around that time, where it was a adult story with relationships and sex, but the characters were anthros as opposed to being people. which expanded what they could tell story-wise, but also made certain things more palpable, I guess, because, you know, oh, it's not necessarily talking directly race relations and talking specifically about dealing with the cops and vice laws and stuff. It's about, you know, a cat lady who runs a strip club and fights the pigs who are like literal pigs, you know? What's also interesting is Jesus Christ, Uncle Kage has been in this fandom forever, and he's got his little hooks in from like day one. Like, I did not know just how far back his connections with Albany, now Anthrocon, go, which really surprising that that dude's still kicking and still leading Anthrocon, which is still the second largest, you know, asterisk, furry fandom convention in the world. But it talks about Kage and a bit of his experiences getting into that. There's lots of really nice archival footage, stuff like from 1988 Comic-Con, where it's like, hey, look, it's Art of the Comic Xanadu by Vicky Wyman. Reed Waller and his APA called Voodie, which talks about what APAs were and how wild that even was, because, you know, people would photocopy 30 copies of an illustration, mail it out to a place, and then in a month or two, you might get the stapled together or spiral bound comic book featuring all the various pages that people contributed back. And so, like, I find that particular part really fascinating, because I've had the opportunity to see some really old Star Trek fanzines. Back at HavenCon a few years ago, I remember looking at a Star Trek fanzine from like 1979, like very, very pretty soon after Star Trek had been a thing. And it literally had pinups of the cat girl from the animated series as like an insert art piece, because people were horny for the furry alien back then too. So, you know, Rule 34 goes back the full distance. And it was really interesting too, because, you know, it focuses on how the furry fandom is not a property that anyone can own. It is not a thing that a corporation can come in and say, this is ours. Can't step in and say, no, you can't do this thing with our IP, because it is our IP. It is something that we make. It is something we control. And that is what I think makes the furry fandom so special, is that we're all fans of each other. We're fans of the art. We're fans of the concepts. And like, yes, I think it's really cute that there are plenty of anthro characters that we can draw from in popular media, but I'm generally more interested in my own, you know? Like, I want to think up art and ideas of my characters doing things and paying people to make that a reality, rather than paying someone to make a pinup of, you know, Maid Marian. Which, thankfully, there have been plenty of people that do that frequently. So, like, she's still a very popular character, even though her movie came out in, like, 1973 or something like that? It was a while back. And it also points out, too, that, like, the first fursona was done by Ken Sample. Like, his Ken Cougar character in the interviews was basically like, yo, hey, you keep drawing this cougar character that looks kind of like you. And he's like, well, that's me. That's me as a cougar. That's my furry persona, or fursona. It's also worth noting that, like, Ken Sample is a black dude, and he's one of the, you know, early artists in the fandom. I don't know if he's still around, but, like, I remember seeing his art very early in my experience in the fandom back in the early 90s. So it's just one of those neat little footnotes that, you know, I encourage you to go and watch this one. Like, you can buy it on Blu-ray for a limited time, but you can still watch it on YouTube forever, hopefully. Like, towards the back end of the film, they do focus a little bit on the elements of the fandom that make it unique, or some of the challenges that we're facing. Like, Sable talks about how the fandom is very sex positive. It was a very important space for queer people to explore their identity, which is very true. It has various statistical things like, you know, 80% of the furry fandom identifies of some flavor of LGBT. If that is, you know, bi to queer to lesbian to trans, they found the stat where it was like, 12.2% furries ID a trans. And that's like based off a 2015 or 2016 furry survey. Like, they still do the furry surveys, but the last year they did data that was available and collatable was like 2016. Like, they still do certain things, like the UT group does them at Furry Fiesta, but I don't know if they have that particular data available for people to browse or look at. Like, that was actually something I would need to look up, because when you have old data, all you know is how things were a few years ago. But, like, they're still doing furry surveys. I remember taking a furry survey this year at Furry Fiesta 2020. One topic they touch on that they have Kage talk about is generally the furry fandom's view in the media. Because, like, some of the earliest news media attention towards the fandom was in, like, 1993, where they went to an early conference, and people generally were positive about these weirdos in costumes having a good time about their cat people. But then, of course, we have the 2001 Vanity Fair article, we have MTV and their shittiness, the CSI episode in 2003 that we still hear about to this day, and that led to a very insular environment in the fandom and a very big distrust of the media. That's why a lot of the fandom decided to do, like, YouTube and shit and podcasts, because we can put out our own voices and give a more personal view than, say, the news media going, haha, look at these weirdos. Well, these particular weirdos have raised, like, several hundred thousand dollars for charity in North Texas, so, you know, that's just me. You know, it talks about sex in the fandom, it talks about how, like, people accuse Kage of trying to whitewash the fandom, which is kind of true in a lot of ways, but also he just kind of weasel words it. You know, Kage is his own fucking thing. There are people that have much stronger opinions on him than I do, but I really don't. And right now, I don't have a lot of bandwidth to think about him as a person to be like, do I really care? I go to Anthrocon because I enjoy it, and I go to Vend, and I hope I get to do it again. So, like, I really don't care too much about the con chair of a convention I'm attending, provided they're not, like, a rapist or a white supremacist or, you know, et cetera, right? I'm just there to sell books to people. One thing they do spend a little bit of time is they talk about the burned furs and how basically it was a reaction to gayness in the fandom and how queer the furries had become. Because when it's all just big-titted vixens and skunks and all that, it's all fine. But then suddenly it's gay and that's a problem. And, you know, the burned furs felt that they had been burned by the fandom's decadence and whatnot. But reality is that they just don't like gay people. Which is ironic because one of the people that wrote the original manifesto, Squee Rat, went on to become the proprietress of Iron Circus Comics, which is really gay. But not furry, but still really gay. When I found that out, I, like, unfollowed and blocked them because I had followed and supported them a couple times on Kickstarter. But you know what? After all the damage she did, she can go eat shit. You know, and Sable is back in the scene a little bit. That he's like, ultimately trying to push porn and adult content is about pushing LGBT people out of the furry fandom. And that was what it was at the beginning, and it's a lot of what we still deal with today, right? We have a lot of younger furs coming into the fandom who, you know, they get off their anti-SJW phase and shift slightly left, but then they still keep their sex negativity, and they come into adult spaces telling adults that they can't do kinks and whatever that they have been doing longer than these little fuckers have been alive, and cause, you know, like, I'm 14 and I'm gonna make a call-out thing against this person who does porn, but, like, yo, you're 14, shut the fuck up, don't talk to me. Like, I seriously wish there was a thing on Twitter, you know, they gave everybody the reply controls where you could just be like, you have to be over 18 to reply or see my posts. That would be nice, but unfortunately it's not quite so granular because that would require them having to keep tabs on everybody's age, which is its own barrel of fish that nobody wants to touch. If you want to go and block a crapload of minors on Twitter though, you can certainly look up the hashtag FluffyFandom, and that will provide you a ton of minors on Twitter.com complaining about how hypersexualized the furry fandom is and how they're going to go make their own fandom, the fluffy fandom, that's safe for work and good for all ages. And I fully encourage them to do so because that means maybe they'll shut the fuck up on random artists' Twitter. And maybe if they think paws and maws are suspicious, maybe they'll eventually go fuck off and get interested in skateboards or K-pop or something. These are not the people that you really need to pay attention to. Because I fully believe the furry fandom is a really good space, and you will find your found family here if you put in the effort to meet people and not be a shit. Like, if you find a way to ingratiate yourself, find yourself a group, find yourself some friends, the furry fandom can totally be a found family, and that's how it is for many, many people. Like, you go to a con and you're like, holy shit, these people are like me. They like the weird animal people. They like the porn. They like this, that, and the other, and God, they wish they could be their personas. And that's how a lot of people really get along. Like, you can have pretty disparate points of view in some regards and still get along because you have at least one unifying point of, well, I sure do like animal people. But unfortunately right now, without cons or fur meets to really get that social energy out, I think a lot of people are just kind of going a little stir crazy on Twitter.com and picking fights wherever they can. It's been pretty unpleasant in a lot of regards, but, you know, thank God for being able to mute words on Twitter, right? You know, the fandom is a really positive influence for most people, and it's a concept that's not going away. The furry fandom is coming up on 50 years of being around here pretty soon, which is really nuts. Like, it's been around only slightly less time than, like, the Star Trek fandom is, really. I really think that Ash did a really good job with the documentary, and I really feel that she and other Ash and Chip Fox and all the people that are involved did the best they could with their limited budget to really get out a positive, well-representing documentary on the furry community as it stands. Like, obviously, there's going to be gaps where their budget didn't allow it. Like, they did apparently all of this on $30,000, which in grand scheme of things is fuck all, because they had to, you know, pay for musicians like Pepper Cody did music for it. Like, the credits thing is like, where are they now? You know, at the end of most documentaries where all a Pepper Cody song plays and you get feels because, oh, the fandom, it really is nice. And then you see the scroll of all the people that contribute to the Kickstarter, and you're like, I know them. Oh, that's me. I know that guy. You know, so that's really good. So definitely go back and watch The Fandom on YouTube. If you want, you can totally buy a Blu-ray copy of it. I think that if they get to keep making this, there will be a lot of really interesting parts that are coming in the future. You know, and one thing is, they did talk to a lot of minority members of the community. You've got lots of trans representation, lots of gay representation. You got Black and Asian, Hispanic members of the community. Like, this, in contrast to the Brony documentary, is incredibly diverse. So definitely big props to Ash on that one. And I look forward to hopefully getting to see more from her in the future. Other than that, I mean, we've watched the first season of Umbrella Academy on Netflix. It's pretty good. We finished watching all of Killjoys, the 2013 sci-fi adventure series, which is pretty fun. Like, I know for a fact that without the structure of Panther and Adam in my life, that I would just have gone nuts by now. And so, like, he provides structure, Panther provides structure. We've been doing a lot of cooking. We got a pressure cooker, and so we've been, like, just pressure cooking everything. We're, like, making rice, we're making chicken, we're making veggies, we're making this, that, and the other. So between, like, our mixer, our air fryer, and our new pressure cooker, we have just been cooking the hell out of things. Like, we made a batch of rolls here 3 days ago and managed to eat all of them. We cooked, like, 5 pounds of chicken the other day and spiced it up, and now we're just eating it with pretty much everything. Which is pretty good, too. Like, I went to the store yesterday, and they had these massive $1 French loaf just sitting there. And I was like, sure, why not? So we were having spiced chicken subs with, like, Swiss cheese. And that's dinner with some pretzels. Well, I'm in here recording this, and Panther is over there playing Battletech on his resurrected Mac Pro. We had a friend of ours who was going to scrap these machines, donate them to us instead, and they turned out to be early to late 2008 Intel Macs with, you know, the old video cards and whatever. But Panther did some research and found out that if he put a new video card in this case, a AMD RX 580, that he could update these machines to run the current version of the OS. And so, even though the processor is a little slow, they're still i7s. They're i7-2600s, I think. So pretty old, about the same vintage as my iMac, which is sadly dead. But with the video card, he's playing Battletech at acceptable frame rates, and he can now play Steam games on his very own PC. So that has made me very happy for him. I have somehow managed to talk for half an hour on the raw recording here, so I'm going to wrap it up. I'm going to probably do the editing, and then call my mom. Like, if you're in good terms with your parents, give them a call and tell them you love them, because shit sucks right now, guys, and I don't know when we're going to get together to record a full episode of the podcast again. Everyone's having their own struggles, but know that we're still chugging along. We're still active in the fan chat. We're still having conversations here and there, and still, you know, Rahata throwing in porn trains. So, you know, we persist, and hopefully you will too. So on that note, good night and big balls.